Someday about 25 years from now, when we've all grown old from a wondering how, we'll all sit down at the city dump and talk about the good old days. Oh, you'll pass a joint and I'll pass a wine, and anything good from down the line. A lot of good things went down one time back in the good old days. Yeah, the good old days are past and gone. A lot of good people are done, gone, gone. That's my life when I sing this song about back in the good old days. Times we get to thinking that we're almost done, and there ain't nothing left that we can figure out. And I guess it must have seemed a lot more like that back in the good old days. But when you gotta go, you gotta go. There's always somebody, don't you know? I hang around a saying, well, I told you so. Back in the good old days. Yeah, the good old days are past and gone. A lot of good people are done, gone, gone. Oh, that's my life when I sing this song about back in the good old days.
Welcome to Farm Talk, which is different today because, well, for better or worse, Sarah Timchison and Bud are not able, both very busy people, they're not able to continue doing the show, and so we're going to just try to keep it going, and I have a very special co-host, Casey Pascura. I'm Cody Lee, and we're here to talk about what's going on with the gardening farming season in 2024. What's up, Casey?
What do you say, farming folks out there? Excited to connect with everybody.
What a beautiful day it is today on this Memorial Day Monday, and it seems like it's like almost the first day of summer. I don't know.
Showed up today. I mean, it went from plants don't want to green up to, oh yes, I'm going to pop out today. And then also a reminder, if you haven't gotten water down, stress is coming.
Yeah, yeah, true that. And thank goodness to that deep soaking rain, what, a couple days ago?
Yeah. I was just up in the rangelands, more of our dry areas, and it's amazing, greening up and beautiful. Hopefully we can keep this rhythm with nature going and have a nice, moist, productive season.
Yeah. I've had back-to-back weeks driving up McClure Pass, and I did just yesterday, and it seems like we just keep getting like one more little fresh blanket of snow up in the high mountains, you know, every few days or so. And really, we're really blessed to be carrying this far and having the weather stay relatively cool in May, I think.
Absolutely. I picked up some breadcrumbs that there might be some fungi out there that are starting to show up.
So. Oh, wow. I know I've seen quite a bit, Casey, just happening down at this elevation, all kinds of interesting fungi sprouting out of little mulchy areas and whatnot.
Yeah, so should we set the stage here? So we're kind of interested in any gardening questions out there, gardening, farming, insights, questions. So feel free to call in.
Yeah, at whatever experience level that you are at, whether you want to share some great stories with us and some of your wisdom, or if you have questions for us and kind of just open up the conversation to everyone listening, that you can give us a call at 970-963-2976 with if you want to talk about being a steward to the land. So anyway, what were you up to today, Casey?
Just meeting with the farm crew, getting off on the start of the week, and just kind of assessing where we're at. Always a little bit of kind of course corrections in both taking a plan, following it, but working it into what the season's given us. So we were really excited to see some sunshine and already starting to see the soil biology wake up, which yeah, maybe you have some insight into that.
The soil biology. Well, so a couple insights I've had, it's been a slow season. Things have kind of taken their time to blossom, it looks like. I can't think of a season that reminds me of this until back to like 2010 or 11, where I had like a hell of a time bringing in starts in and out, 'cause I don't have a greenhouse, you know? And, we got a hard frost, you know, like a few days ago in Satink. And, I noticed that, lilacs blossomed like, you know, several weeks later than they have been for the last several years, and a lot of fruit tree blossoms got a little zapped, you know, like it looked like it's going to be a really good year for apples, but I noticed the flowers got a little crunchy sometime in mid-May. And what else? Choke cherries did that in the last few days. They went from like stark white for at least a week, and all those smells, you know, in the air. And then all of a sudden that now they're going from yellow to brown, like just like, you know, it's the Rockies.
Well, coming out of last year's fruit year, which was just ginormous in many ways. I feel like the cycle is giving yourself, you know, some of the trees a rooted vegetative growth. I'm definitely looking at like maybe doing some harder pruning that I have been putting off because of the lack of fruit in the fall. And
you mean in the fall, you mean next year you want to do some bigger pruning
this fall?
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. Coming into dormancy, I think.
I had a great, springtime, you know, late winter pruning year this year. Thank goodness. 'Cause I think that it's going to be a good apple year. I lost my train of thought I was thinking of the hardy perennials like elderberries. I'm having a fantastic year with all of those shrubs like currants and elderberries, gooseberries.
Well, you know, we had that long kind of early May, late April where we were, because no real deep cold over the winter.
Mm-hmm.
Where it seemed like the thermal mass of the earth was high, and we kind of then had this long period of no frost that was like all late April to about mid-May. And I was like, oh, I wonder if it can really get back into a deep freeze. And it proved that it could.
It always does.
But observably, I think the most profound thing that I observed in that was just where we've been kind of shift in our pasture management at, you know, Sunfire up on Sewell Ranch, and trying to grow, just leave more cover over the ground in the fall to preserve the moisture. Mm-hmm. So it's not exhausted in the spring.
Amen and to that.
In doing that, one, we have some beautiful pasture that is knee high or higher, for spring grazing, but also just holding that humidity across the land when we got these cold nights. I was like, you know, typically with our elevation bottom land, we would be getting torched with the cold.
Yeah.
And surprisingly, we were way warmer. And
holding in the moisture.
Holding the moisture soil. Warmth of that period. And uh-huh. I was like, oh, aha, you know, like Mother Nature's giving back to us.
I can't say enough to all of you listeners out there for get all the leaves that you can and cover your beds, because it will make or break the beds here in the high Rocky Mountain desert that we live in, you know. And I'll compare one row that I got to put a healthy dose of like deciduous leaves on in the fall compared to one that I couldn't. And it you know, it suppresses weeds, holds in the moisture. You see like all of the organic matter, the earthworms. Yeah. Mulch.
Totally. You know, I was just like sitting with the importance of moisture management in uh-huh. our area, and just how interconnected everything is, and just also how oftentimes difficult and challenging that particular job when it comes to either gardening or farming, land management in general. And, you know, I think oftentimes the best advice I can give a gardener is how to manage their water better. And once they do that, it's like, wow, light bulb went on.
Yeah. And not a lot of people think about overwatering, you know, when it is, it can be so hot and dry and windy here, especially in June. And overwatering can end up drying out your soil more, right?
Yeah, you know, it's, there's a lot of layers that we could digest into that, but you know, it's just the alchemy of water and the whole of how the plants interact and the timeliness of watering and all those things just have a huge, huge effect. I mean, what are your thoughts on just like water timing and experience, Cody? And
well, I sort of like to just let it happen and let the, I'm more of a, you know, hands-off like permaculture kind of gardener and kind of like just want to observe the plants each season and see what, how they're responding to just our natural cycles. And I've hardly had to use like artificial, like a pump for irrigation this season, you know, and I've kind of just like hand watered in my peas a little bit just to keep them from dry, just to keep them growing more, but not to baby them too much because I want things to just adapt and be hardy to our climate, you know?
Yeah, that's good. I mean, it's kind of for the listeners out there to give a little bit of, you know, contextual differences. I think that's good, you know, because, you know, for me, you know, managing large acreage and scale production system is much different than, you know, a permaculture style family and community kind of feeding garden, which is kind of more of a Cody's expertise. So I think this is fun, you know, getting together and hopefully we get some callers. I mean,
call us at 970-963-2976 if you want to chime in on what's going on in your garden. What was that? I want to ask, I'm super curious, Casey, what's going on up at Sunfire Ranch? I'm sure you have a bunch of crops in the ground already.
Yeah. Today was first day for putting, cows on pasture, which we'd like it to be earlier, but we were just trying to get as much growth and the growth was a little behind because of the cold, so we fed hay a little bit later. So that was really exciting to get the animals out, and they were super happy and laying down fat and happy when I left the ranch. And then on the veggie side, it's game on planting as much as we can go. You know, the green light went on for what it's been on maybe for a couple weeks for direct zone things. Mm-hmm. So everything in the book,
roots,
corn, mm-hmm. beans.
You have corn in the ground?
I think it's the right timing because it has enough sense that, like, it'll know.
Wonder what the temperature differences are from where you're at, because you're probably colder than Carbondale, and I'm definitely, you know, down in the low river sink of Satank, and I planted corn this time last year. I pretty much always do, and it got zapped really hard, like in the first couple weeks of June.
Yeah, you know, it's all contextual. I mean, you've got a community around there that, you know, like has different water management, has areas that have microclimatic differences. In my experience, it's just if you're planting seed that you know, then and you have enough, like this kind of window opening is like, do it, because the plants will hang out low to the soil and hopefully we don't get something that's at a level of get a frost that really, I don't think it would ever kill it. It would be more of a knock it back beyond the productive capacity. But then again, corn is awfully resilient.
Yeah. Yeah. And it, and if I, I think planting it deep is one of the keys for me. And yeah, and it can still get zapped and then kind of come up from its roots. And
kind of like potatoes too.
Yeah. Oh, potatoes, they always do that. And their leaves are so sensitive. So don't get discouraged when they crinkle up and turn black. They're probably going to sprout back up. That was going to be my next question for you, Casey. When did you plant potatoes?
I mean, we would have hoped to get them in like last week, or but it's on the slate for this week. So plant.
Okay. You're the same as me. Yeah. I have the little, the seed potatoes mostly ready. And I was kind of eyeing this weekend, maybe with the moon. I was going to wait till the full moon was waning. And do you, there's a lot of different legends in the Roaring Fork Valley. There's the potato angel on Mount Sopris, which I don't really vibe with that one, but I always go by the snow melting off the top of Basalt Mountain, that a really old timer, Clem Hughes, told me. And then I just heard a new one from Bruce Trujillo and Satank that said, when oak leaves are the size of a squirrel's ear. And I just thought, well, I don't know if I know what the exact size of a squirrel's ear is.
I'm trying to imagine that. I mean, but, you know, in my experience is like the window opens in the middle of May. And it really, depending on the type of potato that you're planting, can stay open until the third week in June. Now, the third week in June is getting late, and you're probably not going to get the county-winning potato. But it doesn't hurt, you know. Kind of brings me to one of our main principles of our farm, which is ABP, always be planting. And, you know, I think gardeners can get, like, you know, analysis paralysis. Like, they're worried about failure. In reality, is like, the plants, get them out there.
I don't want to quote you on this, but I thought it was absolutely brilliant. I think once you, I heard you say, there are no mistakes, just compost.
Yeah, that's another principle for sure.
So just keep planting. Yeah.
Yeah, and then also you got to thin. Sometimes you got to do it, but, you know, plants naturally grow from seeds that fall on the ground, and putting them in the ground. And, you know, your point about corn and deeper planting, I think that's a good thing for everybody to kind of realize. You know, generally the rule of thumb has been twice the depth of the size of the seed, but I prescribe more to the depth of moisture consistency.
Yeah.
During hot spells based on your water management that you have.
A deeply planted seed kind of gets to adapt for a while with the soil moisture and temperature changing, and it knows, like, okay, now it's time to wake up, and it's deeply rooted. Yeah.
And it understands that, you know, when you're talking about alchemy, or, you know, it's, if it's deep enough and it comes up and it says, you know, not now, next week.
Yeah.
You know, but it's still alive under there.
Yeah. And yeah, yeah.
The more, and the plants are amazing like that, just like the old fruit trees are amazing like
I like that with corn and squash, deeper than conventional ways.
How deep do you, I'm like 2-3 inches,
like my finger. Yeah,
yeah. Sounds about right.
What's your favorite kind of potato to grow up here?
I really love the German butterball.
Ooh, yeah.
As far as just an all-around tasty, delicious, versatile. You know, I'm really, just the scale of our farm is starting to cause some, you know, troubles within being able to study everything I want to study. And I really want to get back into, like, can we collect, like, all the world's diversity of potatoes and start a germplasm repository here and start playing with them. And
that's a brilliant idea, because it's a perfect environment to grow potatoes. Yeah. Yeah, well, I strongly support you in that, Casey. I think you should get like a grant to go to Peru or something and go gather. Have you ever been there?
Well, my little brother was is adopted from, he grew up in Lima, but also just one of our farm managers, Nick Owings, is fiance is from Lima. So we've been looking at the possibilities of this type of stuff. But, you know, that's generally like what we're rooted in. Some of our work is collecting, stewarding, and making available genetic diversity. And we're hoping we can really take that to the next level over the next decade. But I mean, I know you, Cody, have a lot of seeds that you've stewarded for many years. I mean, what are you excited about?
Man, I don't know. I spend a lot of my time working at the office at KDNK more than being a plant breeder anymore. But I'm really proud of my tomatoes that I've grown for like maybe almost 14 years here or something. And we didn't even start any this year. That says a lot. I'm always proud of our peas and satank that we've grown since 2011. Yeah, I don't know, man. Yeah.
any corns, beans that are...
The corn has been the same, like a Tarahumara mountain flower corn from Chihuahua, as far as I know, the deepest origins of it. And I've been growing that one since about 2013, I think. And it's always really hardy, but I had a really rough year with corn last year. Yeah.
I think last year would have been the year that it would have been tough because we had a cool, like we didn't have frost, but we had a cool year last year and similar kind of to this year. You know, this year I think maybe was on the cooler side, but I think that just the summer heat wasn't there. And, you know, some things just need the heat, like our, you know, peppers this year are really getting a lot of bugs and issues because one, I think our accuracy and water timing, like when you time your watering your starts and kind of keeping them colder than they like for longer than they like. But then, you know, and then susceptibility comes from stress, you know, and a pepper in Carbondale and in a cold spot that's always cold. So, you know, I foresee this being a really good breeding year for peppers for us.
Oh, good. Oh, I love that about your place, man. And I used to be so into peppers too, and I've kind of fallen off with that, except last season was the first time I had an aunt in Texas, like north of Houston, where my Lee family has been for like 160 years, and she was dwindling. They knew she was about to pass away, but they said her greatest joy was being out in the garden, and she was really passionate about her peppers. And my uncle gave me this bag of this full-on diversity of different shapes and colors of peppers grown down, you know, down there in a hot, humid climate. And a lot of them were like too hot to eat, you know. And I really enjoyed like making stuff out of them, but I just kind of planted the smorgasbord of like all of those different kinds of peppers, and I just called them Annie Jenny's peppers. And we had a really great luck last year growing them in Carbondale. Yeah,
I mean, it's that genetic gene pool. Who knows what it'll birth? You know, I mean that's the fun of it. I mean, I think, you know, I was digging back into the library of seed that had, you know, just been, let's see how many different sweet pepper varieties have I had, and then trying to get them all planted this year with an idea of maybe growing them, over in the North Fork and some over here. And
cool.
It was so cool just to revisit some of the inspiration written on the packets.
Oh, cool.
You know, this was like, I had Poblano Bell cross, which is like you wouldn't typically see because you wouldn't put your Poblanos near your sweets because you'd want to keep that Poblano-ness.
Yeah.
And I wrote on there, Poblano Escobel.
and the results?
The results are unknown, but they're sitting up there waiting for a home to study. But, I mean, the fun was just to look at back at inspiration that leads to, you know, just to think even further back of, like, what inspired somebody to create, to take the hot pepper and make it sweet.
We need to dedicate a whole show, I think, to seed saving and breeding, you know, because that's, folks, in case you didn't know, that's like what human survival has depended on for all of our evolution, and like why we have food at the city at the supermarket, you know.
Yeah, and it's all levels that, like, all our food came from wild relatives and selected, and not just plants, it was also animals. And
yeah.
The more that those stories ring true, and you can be part of it in the simplicity of saving a seed and then watching it change over the years is just so inspiring.
So Casey, what are your, like, I'm just gonna throw it out there, the big question of some of your big long-term goals, where you see where you're managing Sunfire Ranch, or I mean, that's right, Sunfire Ranch, that's the Sewell's property outside of Carbondale. What are some of your big long-term goals for where that place is headed?
Well, I mean, first it's collaborating with the Sewell brothers and all the inhabitants there, you know, so, you know, managing in that. Our goal is to really try to walk the walk on how can you do this regenerative farming. And when we speak of what is regenerative farming or regenerative agriculture, it's that every year it gets better. It sequesters carbon. It balances climate. It creates habitat. It brings on the new generation of cottonwoods.
Yeah, it's not this old-fashioned or at least industrial age mentality of just taking what you can for short-sighted profit. I mean, it's what humans have been doing for a hell of a lot longer than what we've been doing for the last 100 years at regenerative agriculture.
Yeah, and I think, you know, our big vision is to live the story, try to innovate as much as we can on along the way, and then to see, like, how does this fit in with the community of people that understand the importance of land stewardship and how we can work together. Because, you know, even though one ranch may seem really big, it takes collaboration. You know, a irrigated pasture place, like, you know, which may only have capacity for a lot less cows than people think, to make sure the soil doesn't degrade, and thus it means then we need to partner with other people to manage lands properly and kind of see beyond our own self.
So speaking of, Sunfire Ranch is working with the Farm Collaborative, right?
Yeah, so you know, part of it's basically looking at the movement from a nonprofit as a whole, nonprofits in the area, and doing work that is philanthropic and trying to connect on what is needed so that we can better regenerate the food system and regenerate the earth. And we've found partners with the Farm Collaborative moving forward.
And it's a great segue because we have Ariane Victor with my own two hands speaking with Ed and Vardy of the Farm Collaborative coming up shortly, and we'll fire off their theme song. And just want to say a big thank you to Casey Pascura of Seed Peace at the Sunfire Ranch. I'm Cody Lee. Next time, call in at 970-963-2976 and let's chat about what's going on the land.
Get out there, get dirty, y'all.